Before we jump into this conversation, a quick word from the guys over at Swim Nerd. Are you looking for a pace clock that won't break the bank? How about one that every swimmer can see? The Swim Nerd Pace Clock is the most innovative and affordable digital pace clock the world has ever seen. Their 9-inch tall green LEDs are specifically made for outdoor viewing and are visible from 100 meters away. Bluetooth enabled, it connects to your swim practice mobile app, allowing you to program any set your heart desires. Take a minute, go to swimpractice.com and check out their amazing new pace clock. It truly is the world's best swimming pool pace clock. That's swimpractice.com. One more time, because I really want you to take a look at this. The pace clock is the most quintessential piece of training equipment for any swim team. Go to swimpractice.com and get yourself the best pace clock in the world. Your swimmers will thank you. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, make the move and become a supporter today. Go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com, and search Chris DeSantis Coaching to become a patron. I think we're delivering something really unique with this podcast, and it's been so much fun to watch it grow. I told you last month that we set a record. We beat that record in August, and the listenership is on pace for an even higher total here in September. We're up to 5 supporters, and I appreciate all the help as we continue to deliver this and more to you. Today, a podcast I promised earlier this week with everybody's favorite Swiss swim coach, Nico Messer. Nico has been all around the U.S. for the second year in a row, and we talk about what he's learned on his trip, but also get in deep with some listener questions about swimming clinics and continuing education. Enjoy. Welcome back. It's been a long time. Always a good time to have you back. Nico Messer. How are you, Nico?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. I'm pretty good.
Yeah, it's. I know you're down in Florida right now. You've been on a whirlwind tour of the United States, and that's part of the reason I wanted to talk to you. Of course, you've been bugging me. You keep sending me messages. You should have this person on the podcast. You should have that person on the podcast. And finally, I got back to you, and I was like, how about you? How about, like, you know, give the people what they want, Nico. The people want Nico Messer. You know, look at all the people excited on Facebook. Nico's back.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, like, on the thing that someone is asking about diversity in speakers, and like one of my friends from Race Swam out in Utah, he posts, "Well, when are you gonna present?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'd rather have other people do the talking," but. I guess I'm okay talking on your podcast. That's kind of different. I'm a bad presenter. So
that's right. The Chris DeSantis Swimming Clinic. We do it once a week, and you've been a frequent presenter on that one. And there was a stuff on Facebook, but I told people they could contact me via my website, and you got a dinner invitation. I forgot to tell you about that before we started recording. Somebody invited you to dinner via my website. So I'm going to have to send that to you afterwards.
Cool.
I don't know if it's like a Swiss person in the United States or somebody, but somebody who knows you wants to have you for
awesome.
Dinner. So
yeah, I'm paying for lots of lunches lunch down here. Because last year when I was down here, I crashed my friend's drone. And let's say the repair of a drone, because he has like a fancy Mavic, DJI Phantom, I don't know what.
Oh my God.
It was a little expensive.
Yeah.
So I'm paying off my debt in lunch money. So
your drone debt. Yeah. So let's get right into it, because you've been to ISCA, you've been to ASCA for one day, right?
Very shortly, yeah.
Very shortly.
We'll get there.
We'll get to that. You went to Gain in Indiana. You're in the Florida Keys now. And this is like the second year in a row, or even maybe am I messing that up? The third year that you've been all around the United States in this tour?
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of my thing, what I do at the end of the swim season, right? When you get a couple of days off, it's just like this year and last year, I had a lot more time because I've been in a different kind of situation that I have been the years prior to that, because I haven't been working with like a club team where I have to be there on day X to start the season, where I can actually say, hey, I'm not going to be here. If you need anything, email me, or you don't hear from me before that day. But one of the reasons why I'm doing it is it is kind of vacation for me, you know, because I do plan some days off, and I didn't do a good job this year with it, because it was all really tight, and I didn't really have days off in between because I had to travel in the days in between.
Yeah.
To get to place, because it's been kind of going from one side of the United States to the other side, right, and come back. And last year, what I did on my days off, and that's what I like about doing it. That's where I like get my head free and I get some time off and just sit somewhere on pool deck. Like, I look up the club teams to where I go, call up the coaches, and I'm like, hey, can I come and sit on your deck and just watch and stuff like that? And that's the only thing I regret a little bit this year. I didn't really get to do this. I get to do some of it now down here in the Keys, because that's like where my roots in coaching are, I guess. That's where it all started, and people still kind of know who I am, and they think I'm like the head coach's brother down here because we kind of look alike, and it's kind of funny, you know. So I get to do that, and I like it down here. It's the island life, right? It's a little bit different. Everything is a little bit slower.
Yes,
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to get to that later because, you know, of course, we're going to be talking a lot about your experiences. I've been to only one clinic, two clinics in the last year, I guess. I would sort of count my sort of clinic. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And then the other one I was a presenter at. That was the Gulf Swim Coaches one in the spring. So I think, you know, a lot of this time, a lot of the questions that we got, you know, we're going to be, I think, primarily talking about your experiences here in the past year. But I think there's definitely something there in terms of, you know, the big clinic experience. You're in a room with a lot of people, somebody's talking, versus the, you know, small group experience or the one-to-one experience of being on a pool deck. And one of the things I'm really thankful for that comes through as you're talking as well is, you know, since I've also gotten off the hamster wheel of like coaching seasons, no, but it gives you a lot more opportunities for learning. And I think one of the things that people, I think that stresses them about some of these learning opportunities is, you know, they'll go like, I really want to go to that, but it schedule wise, you know, it doesn't really work with my job, you know, and that's a shame because they're missing out on something that, you know, they really would like to do. And I feel very grateful listening to you that you and I in large part don't have to make those decisions. I think since getting off that hamster wheel, I'm really grateful for having so many more learning opportunities. And it makes me hesitant to ever get back on it again because it just feels like, my man, there's so many chances to get better that I would have missed out on was I, you know, always setting up for that next season with a particular team.
Well, you know, I think there's like two points to that. Is one, like I'm in a place right now where I do have the time to do it, and I'm fortunate enough that I have the means to do it.
Right.
Like that is another important point. Like for a lot of people, like you may not make the amount of money in swim coaching that you need. So you may have another job, and maybe it's not the swim coaching job that keeps you from going there, but it's your regular job because you cannot just get off there.
Yes.
And the other thing, you know, I did make a point over the last years, ever since I got back to Switzerland, to do this kind of stuff, because there are not a lot of opportunities to do it in Europe, where, you know, there's one big conference, and I did go to that in January this year in Sweden, in Lund, but it's only on every 2 years. So a lot of the other clinics, like in Germany, you cannot go there if you don't have a German coaching license.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, I don't have that because I don't need it because I haven't coached ever there. So I cannot just show up there and coach at some place. Same thing is true for England, where they do have now more coaching sessions is what they call it. But you either have to be coaching in a club team in England or be part of the British swimming kind of staff, right? So yeah. I'm neither, so I cannot just go show up there.
Yeah.
Although, like, a lot of countries are opening up because they figure they lose out on a lot of knowledge if they don't have the other coaches. But there are not a lot of opportunities for me to do that, and it's hard to, like I told you, I can look up the club teams in the cities where I go to here. I can email or call up the coach, and they're like, "Oh, sure, you can come and sit on my deck." Like, at the club teams I was coaching in Switzerland, like, most teams that are 20 minutes away from my team, I couldn't do that. Like, they wouldn't have me on their deck. So it's kind of like, it is the only opportunity for me throughout the year to go exchange with other coaches, to really have some downtime for myself too, because I can tell the people, hey, look, I'm on the other side of the world. My cell phone is going to be switched off. I'm not going to reply to your emails. It's my holiday, although it's like a working holiday. But I'm not going to reply to your email. It's just going to be some off. I'm going to get new ideas when I come back. We're going to be on.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I did it. I think a lot of the, like, we're going to get into this a little bit later when we get to the questions that you got on Facebook. But I think money is a big thing, you know, and then it's kind of like, I do this all on my own.
Right.
But it's something that I have felt the first time a little bit this year, because I have done it a couple of years on my own, is, hey, it would be so much more fun if I had like another coach or maybe two coaches from my coaching staff that would do that with me.
Right.
There's a lot of, because some of the bigger club teams, you know, they bring 6, 7, 8 coaches to those clinics. And what they do is like, hey, it's their kickoff meeting for the season. So they choose the talks that they want to go to. They meet in the afternoon. They don't necessarily go to everything, but they choose stuff that they want to hear about, and they meet in the afternoon, and they do like their reporting on what they got.
Right, they do a debrief, like, together. Yeah.
They figure out what do we have to do for our club team to be ready for the next season. It's kind of like a kickoff for the coaches, like the coaches retreat, which I think is kind of a cool thing, you know, and I'm solo on my own. I kind of, you know, got to go and beg people to talk to me and stuff like that. So I'm like, kind of, it would be so cool. And, you know, like, the only coach in Switzerland that I could think and ask about, hey, you want to go? And that I'm sure they would say, yeah, let's do it. It's Dirk, you know, in Zurich.
Yes.
But when I was working with him, we couldn't be gone both at the same time.
Sure.
For different reasons. Now I could probably ask him, but he also, you know, he's a lead coach for our national team. So in the summer, he's really busy and he needs downtime too. So it's like he likes to go bike up in the mountains and stuff like that. So he does different stuff. Yeah. But any other coach I would ask in Switzerland, they would not want to spend the money for this. And I can understand it. You know, it's rather expensive if you have to take the trip to the US.
Sure.
So, and they're not that into it. You actually go there and learn because, you know, they may be that part-time coach and they like what they do, but they're not into it that much into it. So I'm like, that's what I see when I see those big groups of coaches from other teams. I'm like, I really envy you guys because I think that's so much better as an experience, you know?
Well, so I don't actually want to delay this part till later. I want to just quickly at least address this now, because one of the things I wrote about in my podcast is, you know, having coached, I think there's two points. Having coached overseas, I think you're absolutely dead on. I mean, one of the things that we take for granted, I think, that I definitely took for granted in the U.S. Before I left, was how much more the open the exchange of ideas is in the U.S. I mean, it's just like people are so much more willing, as you say, to, you know, welcome somebody, you know, just drop by and, like, let's hang out at practice and I'll show you what we're doing here. And people are very, very much more open about that exchange of ideas than I found when I was abroad. And this is purely anecdotal from my Facebook feed, but I saw plenty of people from abroad coming over to ASCA, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling like that is growing. Like, people are seizing on the same thing you said there, they look in, within their own country. I mean, I know we had a clinic, a little clinic in Denmark, and it was all Danish coaches. And as you say, there was the one thing in Lund, which is sort of more of an international event and has draws people from all over. But, you know, it is definitely, if you want to sort of step outside, it is a huge opportunity. And I see more and more people from Europe, at least, seizing on that. And I think you're right. I mean, again, it's an informal polling of countries. It's, you know, people from countries with money. I see on Facebook too a little bit of you know, coaches from less wealthy parts of the world who really would like to be part of these things, but it's just not feasible for them at all. And I know that there's, you know, there's some discussion and innovation. I mean, you were at ISCA and there was some talk about putting some of that stuff online for people to access afterwards, people who are, you know, members of the organization. I know ASCA has done something like that for people who can't make it to the event. Now, you miss out on some of the community and talking with people and that kind of stuff, but you know, certainly it seems like in 2018, there's some growing international interest. Okay, let's get to the questions. That people put on Facebook. The first is from John. I mispronounced his name, John Alessandro. But he reached out to me to set me straight. So John Alessandro, who has just recently moved to being a full-time club coach, as I understand.
Congrats,
John, in Tennessee. And just a guy who is super active on social media and asking questions and talking about stuff. He asks, can you find the secret sauce at these clinics? And I promised that I would give my secret sauce recipe on the podcast.
All right, go ahead. I want to hear it.
So when I eat sushi, what I do is I take the sriracha and I combine it with mayo, and then they stir it all around, and you make your own spicy mayo, and you don't have to buy the spicy mayo.
Oh, no, you got to put it in the soy sauce. That's the secret, Chris. I'm telling you, you're doing it all wrong.
No, I don't have a recipe for secret sauce. Nico, why don't you take the first stab at answering that question?
Yeah, well, you know, like, I think the clinic actually happens in the hallway, right? And the answer to this question is like yes and no. And yes, you know, in my own opinion, you can find the secret sauce there. Like, there may be a missing part of your program that you kind of, like, you look at your program, you look what you've done last season, and you think, like, hey, how can we get better? And I think if you go there and you listen to what the other programs do and ask coaches, hey, what have you done? What do you think have you done best this season? You may be finding one of the missing pieces for your program, something that you haven't done. Like, you could take, you're not going to do it the same way, but you can take it, adapt it to your program, and it may help you improve the next season. So, yes, you can find the secret. Something, it's not the secret sauce, but you can find things that's going to help you to get better. But then, no, because really, there is no secret sauce, you know, and if there is, it's probably on the internet, so you just Google it, secret sauce swimming.
Yeah,
and
go to chrisdcoach.com.
And you're probably gonna find it.
Right.
We've said this a thousand times, but there's a million ways to do things, and you know, you wouldn't do things the same way down here in the Keys with those kids than you would an hour and a half drive up in Miami.
Right.
Because it's completely different, you know? So there just isn't one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this question, I mean, what I immediately think of is, you know, I think that you're right, that probably one of the most valuable things is going to a place like this, and you have been thinking about what to do in a particular situation, then you get around a big group of people and they've been perhaps wrestling with the same issue or a similar issue, and they've sort of like figured out a way past it, and you go, oh man, yeah, okay. You know, and it sort of unlocks something for you. I think I used to always make fun with my friend Garrett, you know, at people who would attend one of these things, and you know, Eddie Reese, who God, everybody just loves to death here in the United States, and how could you not love him? You know, he loves when he talks at one of these things. He loves to tell stories and stuff. But I think there was always a huge danger in that people like love him and they would listen to him and he would, you know, give some set that he was mm-hmm. doing. And people would go, all right, I want to be just like Eddie Reese and go back and do this set. And I think there's a little bit of danger in sort of like taking one piece of concrete piece like of what somebody's saying out of the context. You know, like what he's doing has a very particular context, as you say, you know, in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas. It is the right thing for his team. And there's a little bit of, I get teased for saying this, danger. But there's a little bit of danger in just like taking somebody's idea and just plucking it out of that context, putting it into your context without sort of understanding exactly why and how it should fit and all that stuff. I think, you know, you want to be careful about that stuff. You can find some inspiration. I always like to spend a lot of time after I get like a new idea sort of wrapping my head around it before I start trying it out with real live swimmers in the pool. So that's my word of caution.
You know, Chris Webb, that's a little bit like two steps ahead, but just because it
we're
it
always jumping it. Ahead.
Coach Chris Webb, who was one of the instructors / presenters at GAIN this year.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of got off course of his talk, and he asked the people, well, who's heard about USRPT? And like all the hands go up, right? And like, who thinks it's the next big thing? And like all hands go up, like who's using it? Like maybe one or two hands go up. Like, so he's like, so the people who's using it, who read all of Dr. Rushful's stuff online, because you can go and read it all online. Sure. Who got all the DVDs? Who got everything? Who knows what you have to do? Like from the two people that hands are up, the hands go down. So he's like, so you are not doing USRPT. and you know, it's kind of like, that's kind of what I feel all you're saying. It's kind of like, if you hear a set, but you don't have the context.
Right.
You may do the set, but you're not doing what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, if you hear a set that you really like, take it, go to your team, like challenge them, try to do it, but don't just roll with the ball that was handed to you. Yeah. If you see people fail or they can't do it, well, you can hit the brakes, you know, right. You don't have to force them through it.
Right.
You can say, hey, we tried it. It doesn't work. Let's stop right here. Let's figure out how we can make this work.
Yeah.
I think that's the danger, you know, that people are just going to go with that set on the paper and it's the plan and they're going to do it no matter what's happening. And maybe there's going to be one lone survivor that's going to make it. And half of your team is not going to make it. And so probably the set didn't do anything for you.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. So I actually think it leads into the next question from this guy. I've not heard of him before, but Mike Murray.
Yeah, he's a new guy.
I think he's a new guy. I don't know. We'll keep doing our research on who exactly that is. He asks, who or what was the most impactful thing that you heard or learn from? I can say my answer for sure for this question. As I said earlier, I wanted to reference sort of a half thing. I had the opportunity roughly, it's almost a year ago. I think it was just a little bit, I think it was towards the end of September last year. I went out to Phoenix and I got to be on the pool deck with Grand Canyon University, as they had a very special guest who I'm not sure I can name. I know that's like very lame on my podcast, but I don't know how much I can talk about it. It's really it's less important who it was and more that it was the experience of having like a real sort of master coach, and got to watch him working with swimmers. And then after every one of those sessions, like do a debrief, as you said, where he goes, here's what I was doing, here's why I was doing it. And just like the opportunity to go really in depth with something. And he was doing real work, you know, with a real team. And so that was a really, really valuable experience. It's somebody that, you know, I also got to keep talking to afterwards. So the ideas that got planted, you know, as I sort of thought through them and thought through implementing them, I had the opportunity to go back and go, yeah, so I've been thinking about this, like, what, you know, like, what shall I do here? What's up with this? You know, so that I thought was really valuable for me. And that's just sort of the general context of that. And I think, you know, you were referring to some of that experience earlier where you've been in that sort of intimate setting on a pool deck with somebody. What were the most impactful things that you heard on your tour?
Yeah, no, one thing that you just said actually goes really well with that. You know, one of the guys who was one of the scientists that was at ISCA, and that's kind of the cool part of ISCA. It's like the first day is kind of like they get in all the scientists, and it's like half of it is way over my head. But like the first guy that spoke, that's really interesting. And like he opened it up and he's like, look, guys, no matter what I'm going to tell you, you need to understand one thing. And the slide said, you know, the coach who knows why beats the coach who knows how. And I find that really intriguing, you know, because that's the longer I'm kind of into this, the more I feel this is true. You know, a lot of the things I don't really know how,
right.
Because I may be trying things, but I know why, or at least I pretend to know why. And yes. I can tell the athlete why we're doing stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like I had the privilege to work with kind of the better crop of athletes in Switzerland these past 2 years. And I think the better the athletes get, the more important this one becomes, because it's not so much about what I did with those guys.
Right.
But if I told them why we did it and they knew it matched with their end of season goal, it really didn't matter what work we did. They bought into it and they did it, and it kind of led to some way of success at the end.
Yeah,
more for some and a little bit less for others, but that's always the case.
Yeah, I think knowing why allows you to, when you start implementing something and you get caught up or something goes wrong, or you know something doesn't quite work the way you think it should, you still know what the point is, you know, and it allows you to troubleshoot down the line in a way that just knowing how, you're just like, okay, but now what do I do?
Yeah.
Right. So what else did you hear?
A really interesting thing. Coach Tyler Fenwick, who's at UVA now, was there for one morning. And you know, he was talking about his time when he was at Mission Viejo, right. Where apparently they did some pretty grueling workouts upwards from 10,000 meters and stuff like that, and he was really into that. But and I don't want to necessarily link that statement to it, but it kind of goes it. But it's something that I can like relate to. And he said like reputation builds confidence, and it's something like, you know, with the first team that I when I came back to Switzerland, I don't think it's about how much you swim, but we ended up having a reputation. How teams perceived us from the outside, and it I think that built confidence for my athletes. Yeah. So I felt right at home with that statement, and I think it's something that you should think about, because I think it involves culture. You know, what is your culture? What do you want to be perceived from outside? What do you want other teams to think about your teams? is that going to help your swimmers to be better when they step on the blocks? Yeah. And I think it's really like a three word statement, but it's something really, really impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely thinking about it as I'm down here in Houston and this team I'm working with, Bridge Bats. You know, I think it's a very different, it's very far from the 10,000 yard a day, what they're doing down here, but they have the team has an identity. They have a character and people know what it is. People from the outside know what it is. People on the team know what it is. And I think that's incredibly important, that people aren't just sort of like, well, I'm on a team and we swim and we compete, and you know, that people have an idea of what they are. Now I'm seeing in the notes, something about a sprint panel. Yeah, I can't believe they allowed you to attend this, but I guess they must have been letting anybody in to see the sprint panel. Or
it's something that's really cool that they did at ISCA this year. That for me was one of the best parts of ISCA, is they, instead of having those talks, they did those panels. There was like the distance panels, the sprint panel, and it was a bunch of coaches. I'm not going to mention names for the sprint panel because I'm going to miss out on those. But, you know, you can look up the website and they can come show up. I mean, big time sprint coaches. And one of the coaches, and they kind of all agreed to that, and everyone said it in a different way. But what came out there is like how the athlete feels isn't as important as what the athlete feels. And it was kind of related to how you end up performing. If you're having, you know, a good day in practice or a bad day in practice, or you're feeling kind of weird and not that well in warm up in a meet, doesn't mean you're not going to go fast in your actual race and stuff like that. And it felt like a lot of those guys, what they do with their sprinters, they worry much more about what the athletes feels, what's the feedback from the athlete when they swim, how can they improve their perception in the water, what they're doing, how can they improve the little details that really matter if you go a 50 yard or 100 yard sprint, where you can really not have any errors in your race anymore, because if you do, if you lose one tenth on a turn, you're out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the, actually you're reminding me of one of the big insights I got from a year ago, that sort of little intimate experience, is just from a pedagogical perspective. The fact that, you know, when you're a coach, you're a watcher, right? You watch and you give feedback based on what you see. You know, the athlete in the water is doing, you know, they're doing the task, and that's that kind of feedback on what they're experiencing and what their experience doing the thing you've asked them to do is really quite important. And I think, yeah, you know, this question, how the athlete feels, is you can sort of get lost listening to them describe what maybe they were trying to do or what they thought they were doing, and less just like, what did you experience? Like, you swam, what happened? You know? So I think that's a really, really good insight. You had one last...
I had to put it in the plug, you know, because it's Mike's question, and it's you on the podcast, so I had to put it in, you know, hashtag work words. Because there was the distance panel, and I thought it was a really interesting distance panel, also because of, like, the people that were on it. But, you know, there was one interesting statement, and again, I don't think it's necessarily about hitting big yardage, big volumes, but... something that came out there, and they kind of say, well, you know, you can use your distance freestyle as a platform. And I know that is debatable and everyone has a different opinion on that, but it's kind of like, you know, there's something into that. And I don't relate that to swimming 10,000 yards a workout or doing like 10,500 or something like that. But it may be true that, at least in the past, it was a good base for future success for a lot of athletes that may have been in the top in the last year, are still kind of there, and like all the older athletes.
Yeah.
And also what some mentioned, you know, that is true in Switzerland. It is absolutely true in Switzerland too. the cut for a national championships for the 1500 is ridiculously slow.
Yes.
So if you can get a cut and you want to go to nationals, swim the 1500 freestyle, because you're if you don't get that cut, I don't know if you're ever going to get one. So if you really, it's really important for you to get to that meet, and you know, it may be a good first experience, even if it's not your favorite race, it doesn't mean that you're going to have to swim the 1500 at every nationals coming up, but it may be a good way for you to get there and just take it all in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just thought that was a funny statement that people like say, well, you know, if I have them swim the mile, I can bring 10 more people to nationals, and it kind of makes me look good.
Yeah.
Which I do understand, you know, some boards,
sure,
they count the numbers of on how many people you bring to nationals. And if it's important or something says in contract, you got to bring 8 people to nationals and you don't have the kids make the cuts. Well, if that is true, they can make the cut in the mile. Why shouldn't you do it, you know?
Well, so the thing I think about as I listen to you talk about that, I had Sean Klosterman on the podcast earlier, and somebody wrote me an email. They got so mad because Sean said that, you know, Michael Andrew was like the most influential swimmer of all time or whatever. He said he's more influential than Michael Phelps or whatever.
The guy was
like, and I kind of agreed with Sean. You know, first off, everybody listening to the podcast, my job is, this is not a podcast. If you listen to it, it's not a podcast where I like bring people on and argue with them. So I was not like, you know, in the mindset to like go like, yeah, I'm going to have it out with Sean right now. But we'll see. The jury's still out on that. I know maybe it's an inaccurate statement to say he's been more influential so far, but we'll see. There's still plenty of time.
Let's do a poll. Let's do a poll with the post and pros and workouts, so we'll find out which Michael.
Yeah, is. I think Phelps is going to win that one. But I will say, as I listen to this, you know, I wonder if part of the Michael Andrew effect won't be that more people are going to go the reverse. Because what Michael Andrew does basically is that he uses sprinting as a platform to go up. You know, he improves his speed first. So you'll see like a better 50 from him. And then later his 100 will improve. And it sort of almost always goes that way. Like he just gets more and more speed. And I'm sort of waiting. You know, he has 3 sort of world-class 100 meters. And his 50 free is awesome, right? So I'm sort of waiting for that 100 free, I think a lot of people are, to come through. And I wonder if more and more people aren't going to start using sort of that speed. We might see in the future that that there's a lot of people working from the bottom up. You know, can you get 4 good 50s, and can that be a platform, you know, instead of what you're referring to, which is sort of what I grew up with, like everybody should be good at the 400 IM and that'll be your platform for future success.
Sorry to our Hungarian friends listening to this.
they don't care, Nico.
Interesting you would mention that because, again, I'm going to take 2 steps ahead, but, you know, at Gain, people, it's really interactive and people go off on tangents and stuff like that. And Vernon Gambetta, who runs the Gain thing.
Yes.
He presented something at the end. I'm like, I know it was meant to be related to like the dry land and stuff. And he's coming more from the track side, but his credo of getting athletes like to the top is like, get fast, get strong, get fit. And then you get to compete and get to win. But it's kind of that thing. He doesn't say you have to do USRPT or something like that, but you got to build the speed because you can only get strong if you're fast, and you can only get fit if you're swimming at the right pace.
Yeah.
And you know, I may have said that in the past in the podcast, but when I first got back to Switzerland, the team that I was working with, oh my God, I wanted to leave like on my first day on deck and we couldn't get anything done. And I felt like the best thing we could do was 25 sprints, you know?
Yeah.
So we did a bunch of 25 sprints for a long time. And I mean, it worked, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, next question from Katie McInerney. I hope now I'm going to hear, because I've messaged with
her.
Yeah, sorry.
We butcher names. Sorry for that.
Katie McInerney. I think that's how you do it, but I'll hear from her if I mess it up, and I'm sorry, Katie, if I did. How do you figure out? So this is kind of not actually a question for us, but we're going to, I mean, she's asked, how do you figure out the content of your clinics? You and I are not actually developing clinics. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, we're going to put our hat on and pretend that we're the organizers of some of these things. You know, it seems like it could be overwhelming in trying to narrow it down. What do you think about that question? If you're pretending to be Nico, the executive director of all coaching clinics, what would you
do? I think it's an intriguing question. You know, it's like she says, I think it could be overwhelming. There's so many branches to swimming now that you can like focus on a clinic. Like you could just do sprint swimming, you could just do distance swimming, you could do learn to swim, you could be a college clinic, it could be more of a senior track, it could be more of an age group focused clinic, or it could be like gainies. Like it doesn't have to do really with swimming. It's about dry line and weight training, you know, which kind of is important, but you could probably attend gain swimming even if you're not a swim coach and get something out of it.
Yeah.
So I guess if you would like to organize something, you either look for a topic that like an overarching theme that you want for your clinic, and it is something, then you know who you have to look for. I mean, if you know at ISCA, Coach Billy Rose was there, who's probably a name a lot of people are going to recognize. Well, he wasn't sitting on a sprint panel.
No.
not that he would not. Not that I'm saying he wouldn't have something valuable to share on the sprint panel.
Yeah.
But he wasn't sitting on a sprint panel, because if you hear the name Bill Rose, you don't think about someone going a fast 25.
Right.
Or you kind of, you know, maybe you have a couple of coaches that you would like to hear about. You know, if you're organizing a clinic, I think it's a good way for you to try to get the coaches that you may not get to speak to.
Right.
Because you may not end up going to the same meets, because you may not work at the same level of athletes, or you're just kind of going to know, I still have to kind of force myself to go and introduce myself to some people, because, you know, I'm kind of, with some coaches, you know, if I see them on TV and they're big names and I'm kind of starstruck, you know, so it's not as easy for me to just walk up there and say, hey, I'm Nico, you want to talk with me? So it could be a good way, if you're organizing clinics, just try to get the people who come and speak at your clinic that you actually want to hear about, and that's the way you can connect with them. So I guess it's really hard, but on the same thing, you know, I and it's the first time this year also I felt like this. I think our clinics are being kind of the same and same over again.
Yeah.
Where you still have, you know, you can get something, but because there's not a lot of turnover of speakers and stuff like that. I think we could learn from like other industries, other businesses that host clinics,
right?
How to actually maybe make clinics better.
Yeah.
Because I think in the swimming kind of clinic thing, we're kind of stuck into doing it a certain way. And maybe there are better ways to do clinics. So if you're thinking about doing a clinic, maybe reach out to people outside of the swimming world and find out how they do it, and maybe do something completely different, new.
Find out how somebody's doing continuing education in another profession. I mean, when Katie posted this question, here's a little secret I'm going to let out on the podcast. I have toyed around many times and had discussions with a close friend of mine about making a swimming clinic, of course, because, you know, as a professional rock thrower, I level criticisms at all these clinics. And, you know, the question always comes back to me, okay, well, why don't you make your own? And I have certainly thought about that. I get so overwhelmed when I try to do it, because I want to do something. If I ever were to do it, I would want to do something that I felt was, you know, better, because I think there's a lot out there, and I would have to feel like it was significantly better than what I was seeing. And I think you've given me a good idea, if I want to keep investigating that, to sort of go outside of swimming. I think one of the things, you know, I had some conversations with Matt Kretich within the last year. I finally got it together to talk to him. Actually, he reached out to me first, because I'm such I'm such a big deal, you know. But I've been like wanting to talk to that guy for many, many years, right? And we finally talked to him, and I had a number of friends that attended School of Thought in the last year. And one of the things that they really liked about being there was in that smaller experience, there was a lot of discussion.
School of Thought is awesome.
And so I think one of the things I would like to see in a future clinic is to even expand on that further. And I get caught up thinking about this because I don't want it to become too exclusive, but I would really like to see a clinic where, you bring in some experts, they're going to present on some topics, but the people who are invited are ready to ask some really critical questions, and the people who are presenting are ready to face some really critical questions. Because often I don't think, you know, there's a lot of people, maybe they're listening to something, it's all very new to them, and they don't have time to sort of go like, but what about this, you know? And so they're just sort of like, huh. And then they think of that question many months later. And I don't know if there's a way to overcome that. And I also, what I think about it becoming too exclusive is like, you know, what about that coach who's just like, hey, I'm just getting started and I just want to like go and like see these people. And I'm intimidated to ask Eddie Reese a critical question about what he's doing. Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned the intimidation of talking to some people. I was talking to kids here in Houston yesterday, and there's a kid here who's going to Auburn, and he was like, I just found out you did a podcast with Gary Taylor. I was like, yeah, my friend Gary Taylor. I know him from way back. And he was like, you should have Eddie Reese on the podcast. And I was like, when I figure out, you know, like how to contact him, I know, yes, I probably could just do that. But I was like, yeah, maybe, sure. Yeah, I'll do that. hopefully, while he's still coaching, you know, I'll get the courage and we'll have him on here to wax his stories and launch 1,000 ships of people doing some set that he talks about. So are we ready for the next one?
Sure, let's go ahead.
So podcast guest, Alexis Keto.
Yeah.
And she was also with me she was a presenter as well at the Gulf Swim Coaches Clinic, so we saw each other there. And she asks, what are three things that make a good clinic? How important is diversity of presenters for attendees? What role does location cost? We sort of talked about some of this. What role does location cost of attendance of a clinic play in the relative success? If you could design a 2 to 3 day clinic for coaches to be a crash course, what does that look like from a pedagogical perspective? And we've touched on all of these topics already, but it's a good question. It's a tough question. So I'm going to make you answer it first.
We circled around most of it a little bit. We're just going to try to dig deeper a little bit. So, you know, what makes a good clinic? If I knew, that's probably when I would tell you and you would have your clinic and we would have the best clinic on the swimming planet, right? I think, you know, the problem with that is the answer to this question may be different for every single one of us.
Right.
But like for me, you know, it's if I go there and as I said in the beginning, if I go there and there's only one thing that I pick up that I gonna be able to use and make myself and my athletes better, that for me was a successful clinic. Mm-hmm. What makes a clinic good is, you know, yeah, if it doesn't cost a lot of money, yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah.
You know, if there are a bunch of people there that I actually would hope they're there and I get to talk to them, thumbs up. If I actually even get to take some time off in between and, you know, figure things out for myself, thumbs up.
Right.
But, you know, there are some especially the speakers, you know, they fly in like the evening before they speak, and they fly out right at noon after they spoke. So it probably is different for everyone. If you're a attendee, if you're a speaker, it may be different for what level you're looking at, you know. If I go there, if I hear all the college coaches talk about their athletes and what they do, yeah, right now I'm kind of working with that level of athletes.
Right.
So I can kind of relate to a lot of the stuff that they're doing. But if maybe I was an age group coach and like my most important thing is how do I get my kids to focus and listen to me, maybe that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's still good information, but it really doesn't apply to what I'm doing. So
yeah,
I don't know if there's an answer to that. I really don't.
So as I'll try to take a stab at each of these questions one-to-one. What are the things that make a good clinic? I'm maybe not going to have more than a couple here, but I have some big headline points that I think are really important to me. And both having had that experience of being a presenter, this is stuff that's important to me if I'm on the other side of it and I'm presenting information. I wrote a blog post about this earlier this week about coming to Houston, but I think that, you know, when I go to work with a team, I have turned down a lot of opportunities where people have said like, hey, I'm interested in having you come. Could you do this? And my answer to that is no, I don't feel like supremely confident in my ability to talk about that information. So I'm not going to come because you know, you're not going to get the best possible experience. I'm going to feel a little bit dishonest about it. And I would just like to see more of this at clinics. Something that really bothers me is watching somebody who is maybe somebody like that's a big name that I really respect, that has a lot of really valuable information, but you're watching them present on something that's just sort of like, yeah, we asked them to give like another talk and they're just sort of like spitballing some ideas. I don't want to see that. I want to see like, what is it? What are the things that you really have the most insight on, and really have done the most thinking about, and have, like you said, you've done enough work on it that you can give the people listening something usable, like, because you have like really refined to the point where it's not just an idea, just like, okay, maybe, you know, this could be a cool thing to do. It's like, no, I've thought through all the ways to actually go out and do this, and now I can teach it to you. I think to me that is the number one thing I'm looking for when I'm in attendance or on the flip side giving information. I just think you got to do that. As we talk about how important is diversity of presenters for attendees.
Huge.
And something that I think could be a huge improvement for a lot of these places. As you say, there's not a lot of turnover in presenters, and that you can sort of form like a little bubble of feedback loop that's not entirely productive for these kinds of things. And I'm going to interpret the question from Alexis to mean, we're not just talking about, you know, a different set of people, but I'd like to see people from, more parts of the world. I'd like to see, people from more different backgrounds. I'd like to see more women. I'd like to see, more non-white people talking at these clinics. We're missing out on a lot of knowledge base with the slate of presenters that we're seeing at a lot of these places, and so there's huge potential for growth there.
Yeah, you know, the first thing that shoot in my head when I read this part of the question, and it's going to be relatable a bit to like, I mean, it's a money business, right? For some of those people, they need to make money, but I would like to see a coach on there when I read the name, I go and Google the coach because I don't know who it is. Yeah. I don't even find anything about the coach on Google. You know, that are the people that I would like to have more talk at this clinic. So it's like that's what I think. You know, there's so many good coaches out there. So many people. We all have to share something. Not necessarily me. Yeah. Don't put me up on top.
Get Nico, guys.
But that's like if I do all this visiting, you know, in between, and I go and talk to those people, like I take them out to lunch after practice, I'm like that. And they tell me about what they do. Like, I think there's so many coaches. We have no idea who they are because they just work at a level where we're never going to hear about them. Right. And they're awesome coaches. You know, they have so much to share. They have so much to give you. And I would like to see more of those coaches present.
Yeah, like
I've heard in all respect. You know, I have heard Eddie Reese talk a couple of times. I think he has good and bad talks. But I would rather hear someone else than Eddie Reese next year. You know?
Yeah, getting rid of that guy. Who cares about him? I'm with you, Nico. Nico Messer says, I don't want to hear Eddie Reese next year. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, as I listen to you, though, I gather this is a huge challenge for clinic presenters because, you know, you're trying to sell people on coming to ASCA or whatever. I think that you're going to sell more tickets based on having a big name on the program that people recognize versus this aspect of like looking at there and going, huh, I don't know who that is. You know, well, I think that's a tough challenge for them as they're running a business.
I my background with a computer science degree, I'm like my nerdy side is into open source stuff. And if that doesn't tell you anything, don't worry about it. But it's like, there's a lot of stuff where it's supposed to be free on the internet and people like want to get stuff and they don't expect to pay for it. And like the clinics that they do in that part of things is like, it costs you $40 to attend.
Yeah.
Given that they have a big name sponsors like Microsoft or some other big company that are able to pay for a clinic of 100 people, you know, and they just like having all their name all over everywhere.
Right.
And it only costs $40. But that's kind of where we talk about the money issue. You know, if you have to sign up 8 coaches off your team and cost you $200 to $300 a piece, it's a lot of money that you have to put down.
Plus the travel, plus the hotel.
So I can understand. And, you know, as we say, they need maybe to pay the coach that present. I understand that. But that's kind of because I do have to do some of it in Switzerland when you do have education class, I'm like, the pay that I get, it's nice, but I usually use it to buy something that is going to help my athletes because I do get paid. I don't need that extra pay, although it's nice.
Yeah.
But I think if you would ask half of the speakers that come to those clinics, they could care less about getting paid, you know? So I think there's a way how you can improve that. Find a way how you can make it cheaper.
Yeah.
Like how you can make it more affordable for people to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. So this sort of bleeds into the last question, which I didn't get to. What role does location, cost of attendance of a clinic play in the relative success? Huge. And I think it gets to the previous question, diversity of presenters for attendees. As I'm, you know, referencing earlier, you know, I see that growth in international presence at some of these American clinics, but of course it's from the places with money. It's it's from the Scandinavian countries. You know, like I know from coaching over there that there are many clubs that have a very healthy economic situation. They have, I mean, I think that the club that I worked with in Denmark, we had something like I'm pulling this number a little bit out of nowhere, but I think it was around $10,000 a year for continuing education. And I think a lot of American coaches are going to listen to this and go like $10,000 a year. Right. So
yeah, you got to be kidding me.
Right. You got to be kidding me. Like, but we had money to burn on that kind of stuff. So yes, we could have flown a bunch of coaches to the US and gone to something. I was actually One of the things I was trying to do when I was over there was to, I was going to fly Jason Turcotte, rest in peace, over to Denmark and have him like look over all aspects of our team, because I was thinking about, you know, Danish clubs are all top to bottom swim schools all the way up through competitive swimming. And I was looking for like, what's a model of a U.S. club that that does something like that and that's really successful. And from being in Atlanta, I knew that that Dynamo did that. So I thought it would be great to get, you know, Jason to just look at all the stuff we're doing. And he'll have some very obvious things that, you know, we can improve systematically in that. So that was one thing I looked at. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you're have a high cost of entry for something, then by nature, you are not going to, get a very diverse, set of attendees. Now there might be a solution where, you could sort of subsidize the cost of some people attending. You could subsidize the cost of some speakers in a different way. As you said, you could get creative with some of that. I think ASCA tried to do this year, actually, where they sort of like had like an open, you're laughing, but they had like an open competition for speakers. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
No, look, I was skeptical as well of that.
I was not going there because I knew it's kind of like your pet peeve of this year's ASCA clinic. No, but I want to like have a shameless plug, not for myself, but for ProZoom Workouts.
Yeah,
it's the second year we pay for someone that attend the ASCA clinic.
Yeah.
Coach Andrew from Dayton Raiders, whose head coach Kevin Wellen was introduced in the Hall of Fame. Congrats! And Andrew's going to volunteer at the Ohio State.
Oh, cool.
This upcoming season. So, but still, you know, us paying for him to attend the clinic, which is a $400 clinic, we couldn't pay for his travel and right. his hotel and stuff like that. So he still had to make a decision and spend some money to go there, but yeah. at least he didn't have to pay to attend the clinic.
Yes.
So yeah.
Pro Swim Workouts doing great work. Across
there are ways to do it, you know, it's just yeah. kind of you got to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, you know, I would like to see more of that. Maybe we can get Swim Nerd to be the sponsor of our clinic that we're developing here on
yeah.
the podcast, Nico. We got to work on that. All right. Any last thoughts on clinics that you want to share with the podcast audience here?
Well, you know, I think you don't necessarily have to go. If you're in the U.S., you're fortunate, you don't really have to go to, like, the big world clinic that takes a week out of your schedule and stuff like that. There are a lot of local clinics that do, like, 2 days clinics, maybe in your LLC, maybe somewhere outside of your LLC, where the travel, you may even be able to do it by car, where you can keep the cost really down, and it may still be a valuable experience. And you may get a little bit more of that diversity in speakers, because if it's such a short clinic, they may not be able to attract. It's in the middle of the season, that big name college coach that you maybe want to go and hear about. So you're going to maybe get that diversity in speakers and hear some things that are also very interesting to you and very yeah. valuable to you. So I figure the same way you plan for your athletes, you know, you map out your season, map out your own season. When can you take time off? When do things like that happen? When can you make time for yourself to go someplace? And same as you put down in the beginning of the season, you give a handover plan to your athletes and say, hey, this weekend we're going to go to this meet. 3 months down the road, this is going to be the championships meet. So keep your calendars open, you know, not plan your family wedding on that day, because it would be stupid. So do the same thing for yourself and make it a point. Go yeah. to your board if you're like on a board-owned team and tell them, hey, I would like to improve myself. I would like to go there, and I'm going to be away for 3 days. Here's my plan. This coach is going to be here. Everything is going to go the same way it goes. I'm just not going to be here. I'm going to go there.
Yeah.
You know, make it a priority for yourself, and you're going to be able to maybe improve next season on that if that's one of your goals that you want to get better at.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, everybody. That's all we have to say. Actually, that's not all we have to say on clinics. We could talk about it for another couple hours, but you know, we do have to put some sort of time limit on the podcast.
We have to go some places, right?
Yeah, I've got work to do today, Nico.
I gotta get put buoys out on the Atlantic Ocean.
Nico's got to continue doing his community service in the Florida Keys. Go to Pro Swim Workouts, guys. Support what they're doing over there. It's Nico's not going to – he made a little plug for it. He's not going to brag about it. But they've supported a lot of different things throughout the swimming world, not only somebody attending ISCA. And I think that makes Pro Swim Workouts worth supporting for everybody. And again, it's about a lot of the stuff that we've talked about on here, about the open exchange of ideas, and people being able to see, you know, what and why somebody is doing a workout in a particular way. So that's great. And it's been a pleasure as always, Nico, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Thanks so much to Nico for joining us once again. If you want to support his great work, go over to Pro Swim Workouts and access their great database of swim workouts. Please, go and read my post from earlier the week about what I'm doing in Houston. I'm talking to a couple teams here, trying to explain a little bit better what it is I do. And watch back next week for more information about this trip. If you want to join the cause and support the work I'm doing, go to patreon.com and search Chris DeSantis Coaching. And for more great swimming conversations, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in DeSantis coach.com. And I'll be back next week with more blogs and podcasts. See you then.